We're reading today Vayikra chapter 25. Whoever made the chapters for some reason got bored of cutting up chapters, and he made this very long for no reason. Then, as far as I can tell, we'll have to do it quickly a little bit. So I'll just give the framing of this chapter. As you can see, I've given a header here. I think that in some sense this is a header for all of these, although I made some more headers in between, which is Kedushas Ha'aretz. In other words, we've now discussed how this whole series from the beginning of Kedoshim can be framed as different Kedushas. There's Kedusha of all the Kol Yisrael, there's Kedusha of the Kehanim, Kedusha of the Karbonis, we had Kedusha of the Mi'adim, and then the Avodat Midas, and then what happens with Chilul Hashem. And now, there's really another way of framing this would be to have an entirely new series starting here, because as you can see, there's a new opening, a new psicha, says, Vaydabar Hashem al Moshe Bahar Sinai. Besides for Parshas Tzav, none of the Parshias in Sefer Vayikra are said to have happened Bahar Sinai. It all started by El Moed. I tend to take this a little less seriously, but there is something going on here, as we'll see in the next chapter, which is the chapter of the Bris, the Imbicha Koisai, which is very clearly the retelling, the new level, new story of the Bris, the deal between Hashem and the Eden, which is if they do the mitzvahs, they will have things well, and specifically said in the context, and the style, and the way of Sefer Vayikra. And this already starts that in some sense, as we'll see in the Bris, that it talks about the mitzvahs that are said here. But in any case, more in general, these are the laws of the land itself. In other words, the ownership of the land, the work of the land. It's not that we had already in the story of the in the mitzvah of the Me'adim, we had some halachas, but kitzchem as ksir artzchem, as we discussed. But here there's more clearly another kisavoya al-oret, laws of how to interact with the land. So there's certain kedusha, certain who does this land belong to, and how do we treat the ownership of this land. So that's really what this is about. The first mitzvah is the mitzvah of Shemitah. Shemitah, and it's framed very explicitly as a Shabbos. This is not the language that we had before. It was called Shemitah. Now it's called Shabbos. Shabbos is the language of Vayikra. Shabbos is the time. Kodesh Shabbos Lashem. Kodesh Lashem. There will be a Shabbos of the earth. For Shabbos Ha'aretz. And it describes what that means. For 6 weeks, 6 years, you will do plant your field. You will plant your, or really prune your vineyard. And the seventh year, it will be Shabbos. It will be left Shabbos. You will not do these two things. You will not not seed your field, not prune your vineyard, and also not cut, not take what grows from the field. It will be Shabbos. So those are the things. Of course, the question of what the not cutting means is a question. But as it says here, it doesn't literally mean not cut. It means you will not cut it with your ownership. It will be for you and all your avducha l'amasecha, teshavcha, all the other people around who don't own, they will have all it equal part in it. This whole language echoes very much the same language of Shabbos. Shabbos is a day of rest, and it's l'chol avducha l'amasecha, and so forth. It's the same thing. This is a Shabbos of the Oretz. Now, after this, there's another law, which is called Yovel. Now, Yovel is even more deeply regulating the ownership of the land, and I will see later even more laws that are more particularly related to this, to the ownership of the land. So Shemitah doesn't really change the ownership, it's just like Shabbos doesn't really change the ownership. It's not like you don't own your work on Shabbos, it's more that on Shabbos you stop the work, and therefore there's some equality, there's some sharing of everything with all the levels of society. And Shemitah is similar to that for the entire work of the land. Now, Yovel, and there's a Vesafarta Lecha, this is very much echoing the language, that's why I said that this whole Parsha reminds us of the Parsha of Kisavoya al-Oretz, which was in the Me'adah, the Parsha of the Omer and Shavuos, and it's literally similar. And we count, just like we counted over there 7 weeks, now we're going to count 7 years, seven times, so 7 years is the Shemitah, and the seven times of that, total to be 49 years. And then, the 50th year, will have a certain Kedusha, we have over here a Shofar, in the seventh month, again, reminds us of the Shofar. So all of this, this is one way of saying it. I forgot to say, one way of saying this is Kedushas Ha'aretz. Another way of saying it is that this is the broadest level of Me'adim, right? So Me'adim have their cycle, the yearly cycle throughout the months. And now there's also a bi-yearly, a seven-yearly cycle, and a 49-yearly cycle, which is like the greatest Mo'ed. Like once in 7 years, the whole year is a Mo'ed. And therefore, and once in 49 years, we have a Shofar in the seventh month, and the 10th day of the seventh month, which we know that's Yom Kippur. there's a shofar which proclaims, it's Mekadosh, this 50th year. And in that 50th year, what's the point of this? There's something called droir. Droir is translated as freedom, or maybe a specific kind of freedom where people return to their land. As it says, v'shavtem ishlach hazasayim. What we understand this to mean, and in some sense we could see later what this means, is just similar, and this is not said here, similar to how in Shemitah there's people that have sold themselves into slavery, people that are slaves return to themselves. In the same way, people that sold their land, they return to their land. So freedom doesn't mean being able to go anywhere. Prira means belonging to your land. The land that was sold returns to you somehow. Of course, this has to be understood, how the economic system was set up. That makes sense. But that's the idea of Yovel. Each person goes back to Alachazostel Neshpachta, because the land belongs to the family. So you go back to your land, that's going back, returning to your family. This also might be talking about slaves, but these are things that are details that are in contradiction with other places and so on that can be discussed. And now, this is Yovel. Besides for that, there's also the regular Loisiktzru, Loisizru, Loisiktzru, Loisivtzru, in the same way that in Shemitah we don't work, or in other words, we don't claim ownership over the fruits of the land. In a similar way, in Yovel, we don't claim ownership over the fruits of the land. That's the story of Yovel. Now, based on this, there is the question of how the sale of the land goes. Like I'm saying, these all parshas are regulating how ownership of the land works. And this is the Isser called Isser Enoe. But what it really says is that since sales of land are limited, they're all limited to this Yovel, therefore, we have to know this is not like something that's not planned. It's not like something that just comes from the sky and takes away the land from the people that sold it. This, what this means is that all transactions about land from in all 50 years really are transactions, like really a lease. They're a lease for the amount of time that is before Yovel. And therefore, if you sell a field with the assumption people don't know maybe or don't count, don't take into account that it will be all back, then you're cheating the person. So therefore, that's what it's saying. You are selling. It's as it says, mispar tavus. You're selling really the amount of growth. You're not really selling the title to the land itself. You're selling the right to use the land. And that's here. There's an ending. There's a signature. Yeres melecha kaneshem lekechem. Fear God. I am the God. Don't cheat your fellow man. Now, there is, as I said, this parsha connects us, brings us very much to the conditions called imchakoisai. If we follow the law, we will have peace and happiness and success, and if not, and then specifically this mitzvah. And I think then this how we should read this specific so-called blessing or schad that it's promised here for Shemitah. It says, because like we have this general pasuk, Vasisach Machzakos, also a language that Vayikra follows many times, and then Vishaft Melorot Slevetach, you will live in the land in security, you will have the fruit you will eat, you will be sated, you will live in security. It says twice, you have this envelope structure here. And then, you should not worry. So, of course, there's like a question here. There's a question that the Pusik acknowledges. If we give out, we will share our food with everyone every seventh year. It seems that maybe we'll become poor, maybe we won't have enough. And the Pusik is against that, going against that question and promising that you will have enough. And it gives like some detail. It says, you will have my blessing. The sixth year will have enough for the third, all 3 years. And the eighth year, you will have enough. But I don't think this should be taken as some kind of promise, not necessarily as a promise of a miracle, like we should assume that every seventh year there was miracles going on. I don't think that doesn't seem to be what it says here. What it says here is basically, don't worry. These laws are for your good, and it will work out. There will be the blessing will help you. And that's the general blessing for following the Torah. It's not like a new special blessing for following Shemitah. I know there's other interpretations of this, but this is, I think, should be read in that context. Now, and I think that when it says ad boit ve'osatoich le'yoshon, what it means is that you need to plan. Just like we learned before, that when you sell something before Yovel, don't like say, oh, suddenly God came and took it back, I'm sorry. No, you should plan before, and if you don't plan before, it's called le'sonish, so you've cheated your source. In the same way, if you're not going to plan before Shemitah to have money, like Shabbos, just like Shabbos, the Shabbos magic that we have food on Shabbos, although we don't cook on Shabbos, no, mishatorech ve'erev Shabbos, le'echel b'Shabbos, we have to prepare. In the same way, this is the pasuk that says you should prepare, and of course, God is promising that it will help, there will be a bracha, but you should prepare in the sixth year for the seventh year, in which you'll not be able to work. Okay, and now we get into more details of the regulation of the land sales and how it cannot be entirely sold. It cannot be sold forever. There's no ultimate sales of land, because clear, it's not the reasoning giving here. All land really belongs to Hashem. That's the kedusha of the land, right? You are just geirim v'teshuvim. You might be teshuvim, but you're still strangers in some sense. You're just foreigners living on my land. And therefore, you have to have geula. What does geula mean? Geula is redemption of the land. If someone sells his land, and as we said, land really belongs to families, although in some sense they do belong to one person, because one person can sell it, but in another sense, it seems like land belongs to families, and therefore your brother can redeem the land from someone who sold it, and otherwise, you could take it yourself, and again, based on the same calculation, as we said, since everything is only sent until Shemitah, otherwise it will go back until Yovel, otherwise it will go back to Yovel. Now, this is the law of a regular field. That's the laws of Yovel, are fields that are made for agriculture. But what about a house? Houses are different. Houses can be sold, but there are limitations to them. So a house, if you sell a house, can be sold up to a year. Up to a year, you can still redeem your house. Otherwise, it stays the buyer's. That's a house that's built in a bias moshe v'choim, in a city that has a walled city. That's the law of a walled city. And a house that is b'tach atzayim, a house built in the fields, not in a walled city, like in a village, in a place where it's really part of the agricultural lands, then it will have the same law of the fields. In the same way, another exception to this law is the Levim, who don't really have any agricultural lands. So the Levim have only their houses, so therefore their houses also have like Yovel, because otherwise the Levim will be left, if they sell their house, they'll be left with nothing. Everyone else at least is left with their fields, but the Levim are not left with that, so therefore they have to have that. Now, there's one more law, also an economic law, which regulates ownership of stuff, and it says, if your friend, your brother will be poor, you should help him, and how should you help him? You should not take from him neshech, you should not take from him interest, ribbis. And I think this is very much related to this whole subject. Like if someone is poor, sometimes he temporarily, right, will sell his field and also temporarily will take a loan from someone else, like until the next harvest and so on. And that's where the law of not taking ribbis comes in the same context. And here we have another signature. Ani Hashem, as it says, Chem Eretz Mitzrayim. Now we have, just like I discussed, there's two things that we can sell. There's the land, the fields, the houses, and the people. So in the same way, if your friend, your brother, sells himself as a slave, number one, even while he is your slave, you should not work him. Avodah should be like a sochi, like a wage worker. So don't treat him. He's not really a slave. He's not similar to how the land doesn't get sold. Litzmisas doesn't really, don't really transfer the title. It's just like a lease. A slave is also really just like an employee. And the same way, also he will be go out and yovel just like the land. And just like the land belongs to him, to me, the same way the people belong to me, I have taken them out of Mitzrayim, that makes them my people, therefore that's their Kedusha, the same thing, that's the Kedusha's people, and they cannot be sold, and cannot be the Sirid Bebeforach. This is very nice language, because it says Asher, it says Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim, this is literally what Mitzrayim did, right? Vayavidu Es Bnei Yisrael Beforach, so don't do that, don't have that kind of relationship to your slave. You can have a slave, but it's really more like an employer-employee relationship. Now, this is specifically for the Avodahem, for the Yidden that were slaves in Mitzrayim. The Goyim from around you, in other words, the non-Jewish nations, you can buy slaves and slave girls from them. Same for the Shuvim, not only people that live around you, the ones that live within you, or their families, as we discussed, if they were already born, this is like birthright citizenship, but still can be slaves. And those slaves will not go out in Yovel, they will even be passed down to your children as part of inheritance and so on. Now, one more law is that if a Yid is sold as a slave to a Ger Toshev, to a Goy, obviously he can't be sold to a Goy far away, or not really probable to be sold to a Goy that lives there, then he can be redeemed, similar to how land can be redeemed, but this is a specific law, maybe every slave can be redeemed, this is a specific law that a Yid that is sold to a Goy can be redeemed by his brother, by his uncle, by his cousin, anyone from his family again, and they will be working in the same way as Yovel, so they will make a calculation of how much he's worth per year, and give back that amount of years, and it goes into detail as it does and these kind of things, gives us the like the exact description. If it'll be many years, you'll have to pay a lot money. If it's a few years, it'll be less. And that will be the law. Also, looks like there's a law that Sirda Beveforach, you should not let a Yid work hard, or the kind of work that Mitzriim did. In the same way, do not allow the guy that bought a Yid to be Broida Beveforach. And then the same way, even then, he will go out the Yovel. And there's another finish. As you see here starts already chapter 26, but I'm pretty sure that really this belongs to the end of this chapter, of this series. And the end is a repeat, I think, of the most important things in the Torah, the most important things for Sefer Vayikra. Do not make alilim, do not make idols. And I have in Maskus, which is a kind of Adlani Hashem, and then another pasuk that's the motto, I think, of Sefer Vayikra. It says twice in this book, at least. Shabbos and Kedusha. These are the two things. As we saw, the Shabbos has many kinds of Shabbos, as Mikdash has many kinds of Mikdash. Shabbos, Teshmoyri, Mikdash, Yitru, Ani Hashem. That's the summary of all of Sefer Vayikra.